says you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you got a hand tough to make it. History repeats itself, try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one, and you can have your dream. You're the best around, nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around, and nothing's gonna ever keep
you down. There it is. You hear it? It's our theme song. It's back. You guys don't have to hear me sing anymore.
We're back.
We're back. Cap Figure Podcast, episode 21. 21? What's 9 plus 10? You know that meme?
Yeah.
He's asking his little brother, you stupid. 21? I don't know. No, I'm not. So anyway, Cap Figure Podcast, episode 21.
That's Paul O'Neill's number.
My name is Ryan DePaulo. O'Neill.
Tom McLaughlin.
No, my name is Ryan DePaulo. That's Tom McLaughlin. So normally, before we start, we got. I always say we got a lot to get into, but you know, I'm very just excited about this in general. We have the Mets not screwing up by retaining Uranus. They Andrew McCutchen sucks, but he might get traded. This is a hot take. And the new CBA, the All-Star game might not matter anymore. Might not. It doesn't. But before then, we need a moment of forced jocularity. Usually, it's not very forced with us because, as you know, I'm very funny, and you're very good at laughing at me when I'm funny. That was a really douchey thing to say. You're very funny too, Tom. But
I'm good at laughing.
You know, we've been able to avoid the hyperbole or the like ridiculous resorting to like our caricatures, like Mike and Mike do to make jokes. Like, hey, backstage, you were eating a Twinkie, and he's like, yeah, and you were doing your hair, ha 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 ha.
Huh.
So I don't know. Give me your hot takes on the football game tonight. What are your keys to the game? It's the Minnesota Vikings at the Cowboys or at home against the Cowboys?
Cowboys at the Vikings.
Cowboys at Vikings. What are Tom McLaughlin's keys to the game?
So we got a very strong offensive line for the Cowboys, led by 3 first-round picks, picked by Mr. Jerry Jones himself, against the Minnesota Vikings' strong defensive line. And I think the team that wins in the trenches in that strength-on-strength battle, I think, is going to take it home. So that's key number one.
Mm.
And then key number two, whoever turns it over less is going to win. So let's say the Cowboys control the line, but they turn it over more, we're looking at a tie.
Wow. You heard it here.
And that is a proven betting system.
Greg Buttle, who does the Jets post game, me and my dad always joke, literally, almost every other game of the year, his keys to the game, we had season tickets, so we'd be driving to the game 6 games a year and listening to him. And Don LaGreca, who's awesome, would be like, Greg, what are your keys to the game? And he's, I swear to God, he would say, turnovers and points off turnovers. That's like the same as saying they want to play good defense and run the ball. It's
yep.
Like everybody does. So anyway, let's get to baseball. Sorry. But those are pretty good hot takes. All right, so there's a new CBA this morning. I didn't know they were close or not. I ain't been following it, but apparently the biggest news is that the All-Star game won't determine home field in the World Series. But I don't know. You want to tell me some other key things, and then we'll talk about our opinions of them?
That would be the biggest news for you, but yeah, let's talk about this. So the CBA, for those of you who don't know, Collective Bargaining Agreement, it actually went down right to the deadline. Apparently, the players were really not budging on some of the bigger points, and there was fear of an impending lockout.
What were some of the bigger points?
Yeah, so we'll get to them in a minute. Some of the key overhanging points were, you know, like the free agent draft pick compensation.
Oh, yeah.
The international draft, the luxury tax, and then another one was sort of, you know, the number of games in a season and then the off days, which we'll kind of like get to in detail on each of them. But apparently the players were really not budging, and there was this sort of fear that, you know, they wouldn't come to a deal and there would be a lockout. I kind of thought that was a little bit overblown by MLB Network, which it's sort of their job to get viewers and to like kind of create more drama than there is.
And they are management. Like, you need to remember, they're a tentacle of management.
That's true.
State-run radio. So, and if they're the ones threatening the lockout,
you're right.
It's in their best interest to make it sound legitimate.
That'd
be funny. Yeah,
point.
It's like if there were player TV, they'd be like, oh, the strike is coming.
Yeah, that's a very good point. you know, I think the last strike was in 1994, and they, you know, obviously missed the World Series. That was the end of the Expos' supposed dynasty, and they lost a lot of fans, you know, immediately after that. The game kind of took a hit, and it was restored by the steroid era. You saw baseball's popularity sort of tailing off in the years following the steroid era for, you know, lack of trust. The game obviously moves very slow. They need to make improvements in that. But, you know, coming off this World Series where the Cubs finally broke the curse, you know, it was a great series going seven games back and forth between, you know, the star-studded Cubs team, the gritty Cleveland Indians team, just great narratives. There's a lot of, you know, star young players in the game that are adding a lot of excitement. It would be a very inopportune time for them to have sort of a stoppage in play, because I feel like momentum for baseball really is starting to pick back up.
Yeah, it'd be smart on who, you know, either side, the players to just make some of these concessions that they don't want to make. But let's go into some of the things more specific and then talk more broadly, because I'm interested in, I understand. So first, I guess I'll explain as best I can what the first point is that players are getting less in free agency because teams are looking to get a cheaper lottery ticket on getting the compensation pick, right? Or that's like a penalty attached to signing a player away from another team. So therefore, teams are accounting that penalty in the amount of money they're giving free agents.
Yeah, so the system that was in place was, if you were a team and you had a player on your roster for the entire season and they were set to become a free agent, you would extend them a qualifying offer. And for this past off season, that was somewhere in the range of $14 to $15 million. Basically, it's the average of the top 125 salaries of players in the league.
Just for 1 year minimum.
For 1 year. And the player can then either accept that or decline it. Now, if they decline it and then they went and signed with another team, regardless of the value of the contract they receive, the team that signed that player would have to forfeit a first-round pick in the upcoming draft to the team that lost that player. Now, that can be a pretty significant penalty, especially when you're talking about players like last year, you know, Dexter Fowler or Colby Rasmus. You know, Fowler is going to make a lot more in the market this year, but last year teams just were very hesitant to do that because a first-round pick, as you've seen, with the overall scouting of the game getting much better and having so much more information on, you know, the talent pool out there, first round picks are a lot more valuable than they used to be.
Yeah, I was gonna say that we looked at the like makeup of the two World Series teams, and all their biggest contributors, like both the Indians and the Cubs, were their first round picks. Those are like the cornerstones of their teams. And you're right, as more information comes, you would assume, and it is the reality, that they're becoming more accurate on hitting on the first round picks. So was this the number one player issue, like, that they came in like, we need to address this?
Yeah, so this was the biggest issue for the players, and to me, I don't think it should have been.
Wait, what did they get now, though?
So, yeah, okay. So the new system that's in place, there is sort of a tiered penalty system. There's no longer a first-round pick in play. The pick that's received by the team that loses the player depends on the size of the market of that team. So let's say, like, the Kansas City Royals, they will get a better pick than, say, the Yankees if they lose a player. So instead of a first-round pick, if the team that is signing the player is not over the luxury tax, including that contract, they'll have to give up a third-round pick.
Okay.
Now, if the team that signs this player is over the luxury tax, and even if it's, you know, this salary that they're signing puts them over, mm-hmm, they have to give up a second-round pick and a fifth-round pick, plus $1 million of their signing pool for international free agents, which is another point that we're going to get to, but that is a pretty significant penalty.
So it's basically just giving, it's like communism.
Essentially. And one other key point is the compensation picks only happen if the player who is given the qualifying offer then receives a contract of over $50 million.
Oh, there's no compensation if it's less than that?
There's no compensation
that's
if there's
huge.
Less
that's
than
a
that.
Big ad, that's a big extra thing.
So that's a huge point.
Because Daniel Murphy, I don't think, would have cost a compensation pick last year then. He got less than $50 million.
Yeah, I don't think so. So it serves sort of like two purposes. So for one, the teams who would extend qualifying offers to players who are sometimes like, you know, borderline cases, like let's say Kobe Rasmus last season, you know, the Astros, they weren't really happy when they got him back for $16 million. I think they were sort of just fishing for the compensation pick. So there's less of an incentive for those teams to go out and give these qualifying offers because, one, he may end up back with the team. That already was in place. But, two, the compensation that they're going to receive from the other team if they lose this player is less than what it was.
Well, there's less incentive for them to give qualifying offers, but they'll get more under $50 million offers, right? Like you're saying that they're less likely to get a qualifying offer, but so what? The players way win because...
No, I'm saying that's a win for the players, yeah.
That they're not getting qualifying offers?
Yeah, that...
Okay, I understand what you're saying. So, yeah, no, because now, like, Dexter Fowler, there's no delay on whether or not to sign some veteran who may be on his last legs for a cheap contract. That's a good, I don't know, why don't you think that should have been that important for the players?
Well, so the reason that I think that this wasn't important for the, look, it's important for the players because obviously anything that happens between the owners and players is like a reflection of the union versus, you know, the greater ownership group, and you obviously want the players to get as many concessions as possible. But if you look at this from sort of like a big picture, how many players is this actually going to affect?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that's a good point, and people have made that case. I think it's just like a fear that... Well, what do you mean? Now it won't affect that many, but before this year, didn't it affect basically any free agent?
Well, it's only really going to affect the free agents who are getting the contracts that are, you know, if you're deserving $16 million a year, right? So, like, let's say they gave out like 12 qualifying offers last year. I think this year it was less. I think it was maybe only like 7 or 8.
Oh, I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
You know, like those players, yes, they're important, but if you're already receiving a contract offer of $16 million, I think that, you know, like your needs are maybe should take a little bit of a backseat to like the rest of the players in the union.
But that this doesn't, there's not a sacrifice. I guess if you could tell me that there was another priority they should have, then I'll accept that. But I don't think that there is
I do think there is like a bigger priority that they should
and
have.
And what is that?
And that's, you know, that was like the number one issue for me was sort of the luxury tax threshold, which ended up being a big win for the owners. Basically, the way that this ended up getting structured was, you know, the concession that the owners made was giving up the compensation picks, but then the players had to sort of concede on the luxury tax threshold. And so I think that the players would have been better suited sort of focusing their attention on that. And
wait, you mean separately there was a luxury tax addressing, or you mean within the qualifying offer issue?
No, as part of the CBA. The luxury tax is like a separate issue.
And what, it went down, or like the price, the tax went up?
No, well, so if you...
I know it's all complicated, but as best you can...
So it's a win for the owners. The luxury tax, it goes up a nominal amount the next few years. So the CBA overall is spanning for the seasons of 2017 to 2021.
Okay.
And so the luxury threshold is going to go from $189 million this past year to $195, then $197, $206, $209, $210. So that's sort of a, you know, 195 to 210, if you look at over those 4 to 5 years, yeah, $15 million, it's increasing. So that's not nothing. But if you kind of look at from a bigger perspective, the luxury tax is now sort of serving as like a de facto salary cap for the league. And the reason I'm saying that too is because if you look at when they first imposed the luxury tax, which was, I believe it was back in 2012, the luxury tax as a share of each team's revenue of the overall sharing from the league. So the league pulls in money and then they have this revenue sharing, right? So anything, any money that comes in for like the national TV deals, MLB licensing, MLB merchandise, MLB Network, MLB At Bat, all of that gets kind of pulled together and then split up between the teams. So the percentage of the amount that was attributable to each team when broken up, the luxury tax was 90% of that. So you're basically saying, like, we're going to give away in salaries 90% of what each team is getting from the greater pool of money that each team gets from MLB. And so now if you look at it to where it is now, in 2014, it was all the way down to 65%. So it's sort of complicated, but when you think about what that means, is it just means the players are getting less and less money while the revenues keep going up higher. So the
I don't understand. What is this 90%?
When you take all of the money given, all of the money generated by the MLB in total.
All money total, not just revenue sharing money?
Any money that is not generated specifically from local TV deals.
Right, right.
Or
all the revenue sharing
by,
pool.
Right.
Okay, yes.
When you take all that money and you split it up between the 30 teams.
Yes.
Right, let's say they each end up.
Oh, you're saying 90% of that money was going back into player contracts?
Yep.
Now it's only 65.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, that was the problem years ago, is that like teams like the Pirates and stuff were just taking their slice of revenue sharing and pocketing it and not putting it back in the players.
Yeah.
You're right, that's a huge issue if that's happening.
And, you know, even though the luxury tax threshold is going up $15 million.
That's like appropriate for inflation
and
the growth of the league.
Yeah, exactly. So what, you know, the revenues are going up at, let's say, I don't know, over that period from 2017 to 2021, they're projecting, let's say, a 25% increase in overall revenues. That may be a little bit high, but, you know, you're basically increasing the amount of money you're going to pay to players by 4%, maybe even less.
No, that's a good point.
And so that's sort of the that's the issue that touches basically all players, and it sort of funnels down, you know, it comes down to how much are the players actually going to make, how much are the owners going to invest into the basically employees of their team. And so, you know, look, I don't think it's a bad deal for either side. Baseball's doing so well that, you know, the players would be dumb to kind of just, you know, go on strike and not have any of their players make money for a certain amount of time.
Well, remember, they weren't going to go on strike. They were at the disadvantage. They were going to get locked out.
Right.
Which is just, so anyone who doesn't know, it's the reverse. It's the owner saying, you're not working. Like, it's them shutting it down. It's the opposite of a strike. But it serves the same purpose. Go on, sorry.
Right, yeah. So I just think that that's the issue that sort of that reaches into every single player in the union. And, you know, to me, like, this is just my personal opinion, you know, when you read all the media headlines and they're talking about the free agent compensation and these draft picks that have to be given up, yes, that is, it really did hurt a couple of players and it really did impact their market value, like Dexter Fowler and Kobe Rasmus, Yovani Gallardo. I'm sure that they would have probably made, you know, $20 to $30 million more in the value of their contract last offseason if that was not in place and it was the current system as it is now. But, you know, that just kind of, that issue pales in comparison to, you know, the percentage of salary being given out.
Pocketed.
Right.
I understand. But so there's two things. One is, well, first is like with the way it's structured is that you spend 6 years waiting to get to free agency. And I've heard this theory and it makes a lot of sense, that it would terrify me as a young player or any player in the league to think about that you finally get there. Like, you put in all this service time. And for those who don't know, you're not a free agent in baseball until you have 6 years in the league. You can still make millions, but you can't just sign for any amount. And so
you're not being able to be bid on by all three.
Exactly.
Teams.
Yes. Yes. So the fact that they wait to get to free agency and get their giant payday until they're older, it's probably extra emotional or scary for them to see that eventual payday on like a 36-year-old somebody like Carlos Beltran, if he stayed with the same team, that he may get less. So like the under 50 million thing, it makes a lot of sense to me that they would worry about it. But really, I understand what you're saying, that that's a way bigger issue if the revenue sharing money is just being pocketed. And obviously the luxury tax is the biggest determination on how much the players make. But I don't know if there, like, I don't know if this was a standard increase or if there's any way to enforce whether or not the small teams spend other than fighting the luxury tax. Because, like, if you fight, like, say the players were able to fight and get the luxury tax, like, $250 million or something, or there's no luxury tax, then the smaller markets are pressured to spend that money and compete more, or they're going to be hurt, right? They don't get to get away with just pocketing it as much.
Yeah.
But that's a big undertaking. Like, I like, they're two separate things. Yes, that could be the biggest issue, but maybe you can't necessarily criticize the players for, like, focusing on this other issue because it's, like, easier to negotiate, or it's, like, a bite-sized thing to address now. Like, the other is, like, a bigger factor that is more than just up to them taking a hard stance or not.
Sure. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, that's the more practical issue. It does scare me because, you know, the MLBPA is traditionally one of the strongest unions. I mean, it's the strongest union in all of sports anywhere in the world, and you could probably even make the argument that it's one of the strongest unions, period, end of story, like, no matter what profession.
But you're right. They're only as strong as their members' understanding of the big picture.
Exactly. And that's what scares me, is the fact that this issue, and I get it, that idea of I'm putting in my time, and then when I get to 6 years and I become a free agent, to have the, like, my earning potential at that point be threatened, like, that, I totally get that, and I understand how that can scare the players, and that is a big issue. And it did. It needed to be addressed because it was, to me, just absolutely ridiculous the way it was set up. But that trend just, I have to say, it really scares me. 90% in 2002. And if you look at the, you know, we said 65% in 2014. If you look forward, right, the average team is going to get a share of $10 billion in estimated annual revenue. That's the whole pie of MLB's annual revenue that's then split up. If you look at the increase of the CBA for this upcoming season, it's only projected to be 58% of that. So,
What do you mean?
So the luxury tax is only going to be 58% of each team's share of that $10 billion. So you take the $10 billion and you split it up per team. That's how much, you know, each team is making from the revenue sharing
pool. Okay.
And then the luxury tax will only be 58% of that amount. So that, you know, the owners are only going to effectively give out 58% or less of that amount of money that they get. And
wait, what do you mean the luxury tax is 58% of that?
So that basically, like, the hard cap on how much a team can spend on players is only 58%.
Oh, you're saying if you're a team over the luxury tax, you're only allowed to spend 58% of that pool of money, or any team?
No, any. So when each team gets that broken up $10 billion, right, the luxury tax, which is basically the hard salary cap, a team can't spend more than that 58% that they're getting from the MLB. So, like, let's say...
Oh. So it's going to even go lower, you're saying.
Yeah,
it's going to be below 65%.
So if you're looking at the overall MLB revenue, it is just dramatically increasing year by year. And then the percentage that the players are getting is less and less.
Well, but then again, but you just said it right there, that the amount is going up, so the percentage going down, they could be arguing... It's just, that's our profit. You guys are still going to have the same pool of money, you players. But we just happen to be doing well, and we're the owners. We're the ones taking the risk, right? We're the ones who are going to lose if we don't do well or win. You guys are getting paid either way on paper. I guess it's easier for the – I can understand the Players Association being okay with it, what seems insane. Even though I agree with you, it still is, like, small-sided, but I see how they could be okay with that given, like, that if the revenues are going up. So it's more money. We got to move on in a minute.
Well, the one final thing with this point is, you know, that amount of money that is being set as the, you know, like the revenue sharing – like I said, that doesn't even take into consideration like the local TV deals and all of the like Yankees items that are sold. And the greatest sort of increase in revenue generation recently has been these huge local TV deals.
So that's safe from this. They can spend as much of that as they want.
No, well, that's not even being considered in this. So when you look at the overall rate of increase in revenue per team, it's increasing even more than, say, like the number that's going into this formula. So like MLB teams in this formula, you know, they're making more than they're paying out to players, but it's actually even steeper of a curve of the amount of money that the teams are making, because that formula doesn't even take into consideration, and that money's not even paid out. That just goes directly into the pockets of the owners. So basically the owners have a hard cap of spending 58% of their share of the overall MLB pool, right? And that is increasing at a pretty dramatic rate. But then the other side of the amount of money that each team is bringing in is that local television deal. And that's what's really increasing very quickly.
Right.
And so that money,
and that's not even getting calculated,
not even factored in.
That's crazy. Okay.
So the basis by this means of this discussion seems to me to be totally off.
Yeah. No, that's really interesting. That's a really good point.
So we should move on. The other kind of points are, you know, the international draft was sort of a big topic of discussion, or they thought it was going to be. The owners really wanted an international draft because the system that's in place right now sort of just doesn't work.
Yeah, the owners are undercutting each other, right? It's paying money to talk to people.
Exactly. And so there will be no international draft. I think that would end up just being like a big undertaking.
I think
we're going to eventually get to that point. But
I kind of like it. I like the Wild Wild West, where like you get a defector from Cuba, like, I don't know, random Yasiel Puig comes and you spend money to meet with him. You could have him.
But now there's going to be a firm limit of $5 million each team can spend on the talent. And
oh, really?
The way that it was sort of structured was like each team could go over that, but then they would forfeit the ability to sign players over a $500,000 bonus the next year. So like what the Red Sox did a couple of years ago is like they literally just spent like an unlimited amount of money on like Yoan Moncada and Espinosa, a couple of other prospects, and then they just couldn't sign anyone the next year. So like that's not really going to be allowed.
You mean they're just going to be able to spend $5 million every year no matter what?
Yeah, and there's a cap on that. And then,
but that's horrible. That's way less money for those players, no?
Yeah, and I think that is another win for the owners, because
hell yeah,
those players, just the amount of money that they can spend on those players just goes down.
And on one hand, I guess you could say like, oh, the Royals are gonna at least probably now spend that $5 million to compete. So, like, maybe a little bit it'll come up from the low teams, but so much, majority of the money is from the Dodgers, Red Sox, whoever, you know what I mean? It's from these giant teams.
Yeah.
And hurting them way more hurts the pool than upping the bottom.
Well, that particular rule, I think that one of the overarching themes of this whole thing was sort of creating more parity and continuing that trend. And when you look at how the luxury tax really didn't increase substantially, as well as this firm limit on the amount you can spend on international players, both of those sort of favor the small market teams. Not sort of, they do favor the small market teams, because now the Yankees, you know, they really just, they can't go ham in like 2018. They can't sign like, you know, $200 million worth of players and then just spend $100 million in like one off season on international players. But, you know, that's probably good for the game as a whole. Although I would love to see Mike Trout, Bryce Harper in center and right, respectively.
Word.
But another kind of point was the roster size. There was talk of increasing the active roster from 25 to 26 players, as well as sort of fixing around that system for active rosters in September, where you'll see like literally 40 players.
Yeah.
And like this past season, there was a game where there were 58 different players that appeared in a single game.
Yeah, yeah. The Mets had a couple games like that.
Like you bring in a pitcher for literally every out because you have 40 active players.
And who was this? Both? The players and the owners, do you know?
I think the increase from 25 to 26 was that was wanted by the players.
Well, that has to be right, right.
And then I think the owners wanted to reduce the size of the active roster because it would reduce the accumulation of service time.
I forgot about the accumulation of service time,
but
right.
There were no changes, and it just remains the same.
And then also, in the players, they would love to. I mean, this is so far from ever practically happening, but they want to have a shorter season. They want to play 154 games?
Yeah, that was the next point I was getting to. Instead of 162, they wanted 154. There's going to be no change, but
Well, that's a huge undertaking. That's the same as the international draft, almost. You need every single player to be willing to void their contract, restructure their contract, all of them.
That's what I was going to say. It's the players' contracts would be so difficult to restructure, but then also, like, each team has these local TV agreements, so now they're going to have to go back to, you know, the TV provider and say, hey, look, you know, you're not going to have inventory for 162 games now. We're only going to be able to sell 154. Here's the money back that you gave us for that.
Yeah,
no,
that's
they're
crazy.
Not going to do that.
Even their stadium deals, ones who don't own it, like, there's all these implications. Like,
it would be just too difficult.
The hot dog bun vendor who's planning on 81 gates is now, you know, there's so many things. It's so interesting.
The one thing that they did with respect to that was they're going to move the regular season up by a few days starting in 2018. So
it's not snowing week one?
So the season, well, no, move it up. So earlier.
Oh,
so
it's not
snowing
in the World Series.
Well, so that the season is across 187 days instead of 183. It'll give the players 4 extra days off and potentially sort of fix that problem where teams will play night games and then have to do like a cross-country trip.
That addresses fatigue, that's fine.
I think it's helpful.
Yeah,
for
I don't mind. I mean, I hear old school people make the argument like, oh, you don't want to be playing games in the cold, but that's just because that's like, they don't like how it looks on TV. It's irrelevant. The
weather is so out of control too.
And people say like, oh, baseball season's too long. It doesn't mean anything. Like, the players want the days off. There's no reason. Like, if you know, since they got rid of amphetamines and they're testing stricter with it, players are taking more days off. Like, the star players don't play 162 games anymore, and they used to.
Yep.
And maybe that's more than just amphetamines, but whatever the reason, you know, that's not good. The last thing you ever want is, like, what the NBA has now, where it's like Tim Duncan is sitting in 7 road games a year and fans are way upset about it. That's interesting. I didn't know that. That's cool. And then we didn't really talk about the All-Star game not mattering anymore. It's with only 12 years of it, 14 years since 2002, Bud Selig bugged out because there was a tie game in Milwaukee and he was all embarrassed. And he said, these will never matter again. From this day forth, I will be an idiot.
Granting home field advantage to whatever league wins. I mean, that's sort of just a no-brainer. I mean, it will make the All-Star game a little bit less interesting, but not really.
Yeah, because for most fans by that point, I would say majority, even with the new wild card, you don't really care about home field for your league because you don't really have hope. Even if it's only 40%, because that's early enough in the season and delusional fans and kids still have hope. I very little, even with as a Mets fan this year, only maybe 40% of my watching interest of the All-Star game was based on potentially having home field in the World Series if and when the Mets ever got there this year.
Yeah, and it might even have the effect of making the game better because now you know, like...
Yeah, Verlander will feel free to try to hit 100 and give up a home run or all that goofy stuff. Like
all the players will play.
Right. So, they won't walk. They'll all swing and they'll all... Yeah. You can put in Eduardo Nunez or the tokens from the horrible teams.
Yep.
And people won't be mad that you didn't play Mike Trout the whole game. All right, so that'll do it for, you know, we're going to do two shorter episodes the next couple weeks and see how it goes. So that's it. That was episode 21, the CBA recap.
Yeah, thank you guys. I hope that was clear enough for all of you, and I hope that you helped me in my campaign for becoming the MLBPA fan representative for the next CBA in 2022.
Oh, you trying to create that position or that exists?
Create it.
Well, good luck. Yeah, so let's go. Send out the hashtag Tom's Balls. I don't know.
Tom's Balls 2022.
Tom's Balls 2022. Make America, make the MLB great again. All right, bye. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you gotta hang tough to make it. Try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one.